Support for the Think Podcast comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering courses in art, literature, film, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. You can register online now for the upcoming fall programs at smu.edu/CAPE.
I have something like 25 first cousins on my mom's side of the family. I thought that was a lot until I heard about an email A.J. Jacobs received a couple of years ago. Out of the blue, he gets this email from a dairy farmer on a kibbutz in Israel. "You don't know me, but you are an eighth cousin of my wife," the message read. "We have in our database 80,000 relatives of yours." From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Turns out it was all legit. Jacobs is indeed part of an enormous group of cousins spread all over the world, and the number keeps growing as new connections are discovered. But here's the kicker. So are you, even if you don't have a Jules Feldman in the family to track them all down for you. The email set Jacobs on a course to create what may have been the largest family reunion in global history. And along the way, he discovered surprising family connections between people everywhere. Connections that link every one of us on the planet across racial, national, and cultural barriers. A.J. Jacobs shared what he learned in his new book, It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. He joins us from the studios of NPR in New York to talk about it. AJ, welcome back to Think.
Thank you, Cousin Chris. Great to be here.
Nice to talk to you, Cousin AJ. So you get this crazy email, you're of two minds. On the one hand, you're like, family is great. On the other hand, all of us have those wacky relatives and maybe don't feel like we need any more.
That's right. Do I want another 80,000 people at Thanksgiving? but the other reaction I had, as you say, was just It was pretty profound, because we've heard all our lives this simple but basic idea that we're one big family. And here, now, because of these amazing revolutions in technology, we can actually see how we're related to every other human being on Earth. So the Sister Sledge song, We Are Family, it's becoming true scientifically.
What is the world family tree?
Well, there are several, as I say, revolutions going on in family history, and one of them has to do with building these family trees that are not hundreds or thousands of people, but millions of people, and they are online, and they are, it's like almost a wiki model where you have thousands of people around the world in all seven continents, each contributing their own little piece to the puzzle, and they are fascinating, and they could you could waste a week just looking up how you're related in a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon way to everyone on Earth. For instance, Barack Obama is my fifth great aunt's husband's brother's wife's seventh great nephew. So we're very close.
How long does it take you to work that out so that you can say it in a sentence like that when you find those connections?
Well, it did take me a while to memorize that, and that's the only one I memorized. But the beauty of these trees, and there are three of them sort of vying to connect the whole world. That's the big project, connect everyone on Earth in one big tree. And they're quite incredible. And they use DNA and traditional genealogy. And some of them have this feature where you type in your friend from college or your friend from camp
or your spouse.
that was part of my journey that I write about in the book. I took a DNA test from 23andMe. I took many, but this one sends you a list of all of your potential cousins who share enough DNA with you. And on that list was my wife. So I thought that it would spice up our marriage a bit, but she was a bit horrified.
You're distantly related, like very distantly.
That's right. Not first or second. We are about seventh or eighth. So everything is fine.
So why chromosomal Adam and mitochondrial Eve are not maybe the hippest grandparent nicknames ever, but we are all, like all humans are descended from the same two individuals. Is that literally or figuratively?
No, that is literally. I mean, the story in the Bible of the Garden of Eden, that is, I believe, not true. But scientists do talk about Y chromosomal Adam and mitochondrial Eve. They wandered the African plains about 200,000 years ago, and they are about 15,000th great-grandparent, and they weren't the first humans. there were hundreds, thousands of other wannabe Adams and Eves, but these are the two whose DNA survived and is in every single human on Earth. So you, me, Miley Cyrus, a dentist in Thailand, we all have a bit of their DNA.
So you thought that this world's largest family reunion, this idea that you had, could both celebrate family and deconstruct family. What do you mean by deconstruct family?
Well, what concerns me a lot and more every day is the tribalism that you see and the different factions, whether it's red state, blue state, or religious, or any number of ways that people are separating themselves. So I just wanted to remind people we are actually, we share 99.9% of our DNA. We are far more common than we are different. So it was almost this quixotic Woodstockian idea that we should remind ourselves that we are family. And that was one of the motivations.
Is it true that we are nicer to people that we're informed are related to us in some way, even if we don't actually know them?
Well, there is some empirical evidence this is true. There was a great study by Harvard last year where they took Palestinians and Israelis and they told one group how closely they were related. And that group was kinder to each other, more open to negotiation than the group that was not informed of their relations. And I've seen this on a very trivial way. I'll give you an example, but I think it's instructive, even though it is seems silly, which is that Judge Judy, the TV personality, mm-hmm. I always found her incredibly abrasive, just obnoxious.
Right.
Then I learned that she's my eighth cousin, and it actually switched my perspective. And I was like, you know what? She's probably not so bad. She's underneath. She's a nice person. And so that's what I call the Judge Judy effect. And my hope is that it will make us just a tiny bit kinder to each other, or at least less horrible, and move us in the right direction. I don't think, of course, that it's going to solve racism and tribalism forever, but it's a step in the right direction.
So some of these websites online are crowdsourced, and I'm curious as to why collaborative genealogy is so controversial.
Well, that's right. As with any technology, it's got its pros and cons and supporters and detractors. Like the Wikipedia, you've got thousands of people working on it. So there are going to be mistakes, and there are going to be, you know, I'm sure somewhere there's something like, you know, that Paul Revere is the father of Cindy Lauper. I don't know. But the idea is that they, like in Wikipedia, there is a strong community that is monitoring and trying to catch all the mistakes. They call them forest rangers for the tree metaphor. So and with DNA testing, which is in some ways more certain than the paper trail, that this will get better. But yeah, it is certainly not perfect as. And no family tree is perfect. You're going to have mistakes all over, no matter whether it's on the internet or just handwritten.
There are these relatives out there, I mean, these websites out there that help us track our own family trees. How much information about yourself do you have to upload before you start getting interesting results?
Well, it certainly depends on the website. I mean, you've got two different scenarios here. You've got the family tree sites where you can upload your grandparents, maybe your great grandparents. But if you do enough, like a dozen or two dozen, quite often you'll be able to connect to the world family tree, which connects you to, it depends on the site, but one has 200 million people. Another has about 130 million. So that's one way, and the other way is through DNA, where you just spit into a tube and send it off to one of these services, and they will send back either two things. They'll send back sort of an estimate of geographically where your ancestors were from, Europe, Africa, Asia, and then they will also send you a list of hundreds of people who share enough DNA to qualify as second, third, fifth cousins. So those are the two ways to get involved.
So my husband is adopted. He's always known this. And DNA actually led him to a biological half-sister he had not met before.
Mm.
Super gratifying for him. They got to know each other online. DNA testing, though, also might create some unwelcome surprises for people.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's it. It is, it's got the potential for good and for unhappiness. One of the chapters in my book is about a man in the Midwest who had 9 siblings. And as adults, they took DNA tests and found that they were from 9 different fathers. None of them shared a father, despite their assumption that they all shared this one. And it caused some, as you can imagine, some were very unhappy. Others were okay. They're like, you know, like your husband. They were excited to have all of these new half-siblings. I found it inspiring, actually, because the father treated the kids as if they were his biological offspring with love and kindness, even though he knew all along that they weren't. So to me, it's a nice reminder that family is about more than DNA.
You have to wonder about those surprises being revealed. Like, obviously, the mother and the father had decided that they would keep this to themselves.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think the world is going to, as more and more people take this, you're going to get thousands of stories that could be on Maury Povich. Maury Povich bookers will be working overtime because there are an estimated 2% of people who are from fathers who they don't know about, which is a huge number of people if you look at the world.
Well, it leads to the question of how important is that biological connection? Who matters, the father who raised you or the father who sired you?
And I love that. And that is one of the big points of the book, is that family should be broader than just a very strict definition of here's your biological mixed gender parents. I have one story in there that I love. I interviewed a woman. It was 2 Korean women who were separated at birth. And they were both raised in the United States by 2 separate white families. They never knew about each other. But then they had an acquaintance on Facebook who said one day when they were in their late 20s, "You guys look eerily similar, like same freckles. What's going on?" They got together. They took a DNA test. Turned out they were identical twins. And they were so excited to finally find each other. They contacted their biological mom, who actually wanted nothing to do with them. Hmm. But what I love about the story is they said, "That's okay. We feel we have 5 different moms. We have my mom, my adopted, my twins' mom. One had is an actress, so she has what she calls a momager." So this idea that family can be, there's biological family, but there's also logical family.
What's interesting about these two is they really, you know, identical twins always look a lot alike, but these two are, you're right, eerily similar even when you see them standing next to each other.
Oh, yeah, also, and who knows if this is just a coincidence, but they use the same emojis, like a dancing girl emoji, and they have similar verbal tics, so I love it. I mean, I actually have twin sons. They're not identical, but I went to, and I chronicle it in the book, I went to the Twins Festival in Ohio, and where there are thousands of twins, and it is just fascinating. It is such a fascinating little part of family.
My guest is author A.J. Jacobs. His new book is called It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find us on Twitter. We're at @KERAThink.
Support for the Think Podcast comes from the SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening doctoral program where you can distinguish yourself personally and professionally. More at smu.edu/DLS.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with author A.J. Jacobs. His new book is called It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or go to Twitter. We are @KERAThink. Serious question, A.J., why do we care at all about relatives we've never met before? I mean, is it magical thinking to imagine that my great-grandparents 12 generations back have anything to do with who I am?
It is a fascinating aspect of human behavior. We are just so interested in these people who you probably share less DNA with your 12th great grandpa than you do with the guy, the person at the next desk at your work. But there is this sense that they form your identity, and there's a mythologizing. You know, if you can find a whaling captain in your background, you're like, oh, that's why I'm good at fishing. So it is a huge industry. And I have to say, I love learning about, even though I know on some sense it's irrational to connect with these, my 12th great grandpa, I just love, it's such a way to get into history. And even with my kids, learning about how my great-great-grandpa ran on the Bull Moose Party ticket as a congressman with Teddy Roosevelt. Totally failed, got like 1% of the vote. But I love being able to tell my kids that and the importance of activism and failure. Even, you know, he failed in that, but he succeeded in other things.
One of the things you discovered that you hadn't known before was that there were a fair number of Jewish soldiers who fought on both sides of the Civil War, including a relative of yours.
Yes, I suppose I should have figured that they were Jewish soldiers, but I just never thought about it. There were about 7,000 for the Union, 3,000 for the Confederacy, and my great-great-great, I think it's fifth great-grandpa, was a soldier in the Union Army, which was, I loved discovering that. No one in my family had known. I will say it. The more I researched, the less exciting it got, because it turned out he was in it for about 6 weeks, and he never saw a battle, and he left under mysterious circumstances. But what I love is I was able to dig up some speeches and letters from his great grandkids, where they were at a 60th anniversary party making fun of him for being a soldier who only lasted 6 weeks, and he was laughing along. So I love that he had a sense of humor about himself.
Well, if we want to take pride in relatives who've done great things, are we also accepting shame for the bad seeds in our family trees?
That is such a good question. I mean, to me, it's important to acknowledge both the good and the bad. You might remember a year ago, Ben Affleck was on that show, Finding Your Roots, mm-hmm. and they discovered that one of his ancestors was a slaveholder, and he lobbied to have that repressed and censored from the show, which it was. But then it turned up in the hack of the Sony emails. So now everyone knows about it. And to me, that's just such a ridiculous reaction by him, because it could have been such a good, it's such a teaching moment that we all have wonderful ancestors. We all have terrible ancestors. It's very democratizing. And you are not beholden. You are not fated to be like your ancestors. You can break out. Because actually the son of this slaveholder turned out to be an abolitionist. Hmm. So to me, it was an inspiring story, and wanting to censor it is ridiculous.
One of the things that Henry Louis Gates has really made a mission of the show, and he spoke at your global family reunion, he's wanted us all to understand that there is no such thing as racial purity.
Right, and I love this. He was a big part, an advisor on the book, and I quote him. And he talks about how, for instance, the average African-American has 24% European ancestry genetically, and we are all a little bit of a mutt. We are a mix. And this has been fascinating to play out, because you've got situations where white supremacists are going on taking these DNA tests, and some of them are finding they have they are part Jewish or part African American, and their reactions vary. Some of them are in denial. They say, no, no, this is a multicultural conspiracy by the genetics companies. Others almost have a Hollywood-like revelation and change of heart that, you know what, this is not a good way to live, to be so obsessed with my tribe, because we are all part of many different tribes.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. Kelly is calling us from Greenville. Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for having your guest on today, because this is a topic that's really near and dear to me. My dad was adopted in the late 40s, and my entire life, I've just been, biologically, I've been missing half of a family tree, and he died in 2002, long before DNA testing was used for ancestry purposes. And then when I had a child in 2011, it just sort of ignited that, oh my gosh, what do I tell my son someday when he gets interested in this stuff? And so I submitted my DNA, and it took me about 6 years, but I finally was able to figure out who my dad's biological parents were. They're both, of course, long since gone, but I actually contacted the what would have been his siblings, his half-siblings, and it's a huge family, and every single one of them just immediately accepted me, and I've been to, they live out of state, I've been to their state several times. It's just been like, oh my gosh, where have these people been all my life? They're, there's so much like me. It's funny because I'm probably more like them than I am the family that I grew up with. And it's kind of like, yes, this is where you people have been. These are my people.
That's a great story,
so
Kelly.
Interesting. Yes. And Chris, I mean, to me, this is fascinating because there are many happy stories like this. Thousands, millions are going to happen. But then there are others that are not going to be as happy. But one of the, it reminds me of a story I have in the book where a meteorologist in Texas, actually, whose name I'm blanking on right now, but he was adopted, and he, through DNA testing, found his biological mom. And what was interesting is she was a very conservative evangelical Christian. He was a gay man married to another man. And so meeting was filled with tension and complications. She eventually came around and became accepting of him and his husband. So it was, again, a wonderful story. But it's going to be fascinating to see that how these play out. Some will be happy and some will not.
I have more Neanderthal DNA than like 94% of the human population, according to 23andMe.
Yeah. I am intimidated.
Watch out. what does anybody think about how the two species got together?
Well, yeah, this is a crazy and fascinating little, because most of us do have a percentage. The average is about 3% of Neanderthal DNA. And it is because about 50,000 years ago, our great-great-great-great and so on, grandpa or grandma hooked up with a Neanderthal. And Neanderthals were a different species. It's like a lion and a tiger hooking up and having a kid. So to me, this is fascinating on many levels. First, just the idea that there's no such thing as racial purity. There's no such thing as species purity. Most of us are a combination of species. And secondly, what were our Neanderthal ancestors like? And I think they've gotten a bad rap. According to scientists, they weren't these horrible caveman lug nuts. They had the gift of speech. And according to one scientist, I don't know how he figured this out, but their voices sounded a bit like a child, very high and screechy. So I do like to picture them cooking and describing their, woolly mammoth stew.
Hosting NPR shows, perhaps.
I'd listen.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Alex is calling now from Dallas. Hi, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Listen, me and my fiance, Tommy, we've been wanting to go back and trace our ancestry a lot. I notice on my dad's side of the family, obviously, I'm lighter skin, and my mom's side of the family, the darker skin, obviously. And I know I've got some traces of, obviously, Native American in me. And obviously, my dad's got Spanish blood in him. I just want to know if he recommends, or the doctor, if he recommends a good home DNA. I've been reading a lot of negative reviews on the Ancestry and all the more popular sites. But if he's got a suggestion for something that's really, really good.
Well, that's a great question. Well, I will say there are dozens now. I have a section in my book on sort of advice on which ones to go to. I would say in general, you should trust them somewhat, but take their results with a grain of salt. And I'm talking about all of the big ones, Ancestry, 23andMe, MyHeritage. And I'll give you an example. About 4 years ago, I took a test and it came back that I was 14% Scandinavian. Mostly Jewish, but partly Scandinavian. And I was excited. I was like, break out the cross-country skis. I'm going to have some herring. I love having this little variety. But then in the past 4 years, that has dropped to below 1%. So I somehow mysteriously lost all my Swedish ancestors, which was very sad. But the reason is actually not a mystery. It's because partly their estimates are based on the database, who is in the database. And they had a disproportionate number of Scandinavian people in their database at the time. So a grain of salt is important. I will say they're getting better. That's the good news. The more people who are in their database, the more accurate their estimates can become.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. One of the things you recommend, AJ, is if we do these DNA tests and we do hope to, you know, meet up with distant relatives to learn more about family connections, a photograph is what you call cousin bait. You're more like, just like, I guess, a dating profile, you're more likely to get someone to respond if you put a picture up.
Well, yes, exactly. I think that's a great analogy. I think, or just any social network. That's what I see these sites as, are almost the ultimate social network. And I used it like a LinkedIn almost, because I wanted to interview some interesting family members for my book. So, for instance, I wanted to interview a patriarch. So I called up Texas's own George H.W. Bush, mm-hmm. and his press secretary said, you know what, he's not really doing any press at the moment. And I said, I understand, but just so you know, he is my, you know, fourth great aunt's second cousin's nephew's fourth cousin's son. And she said, well, in that case, let me see what I can do. And it actually worked. That was the crazy part. I got to meet and interview George H.W. Bush about what his thoughts are on family.
And what did he have to say to you about that?
Well, he was, I told him how he was, I believe it was about eighth cousins with Bill Clinton. And Barbara Bush loved that. She said, you know what, I always thought Bill Clinton was my son from another mother. So now I'm happy to see it. I also loved her point of view about how to stay in a marriage long term, which is that you should, both sides need to put in 75% because you always underestimate the amount that you are putting in.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Rachel calling now from Dallas. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
This is a great segment. I have a question for the guest. So I'm African American, and, you know, we tend to hear things about ancestry. We tend to roll our eyes just a little bit because, you know, there was a period, you know, during slavery where records, you know, are not kept and things might have been lost. But I'm just wondering, have you done enough research to know, could it be a rewarding experience, I guess, you know, if you're African American, to kind of find out about your ancestry? I guess that's my question.
Well, that is a great question. I think, of course, it depends on the person, but I know personally huge numbers of African American people who have found it very rewarding. And I spent some time with the African American Genealogy Association. One part of the book, which I found interesting, was that I spent some time with the Daughters of the American Revolution, which is the prototypically elitist, whitest organization. At least that's the stereotype. But the woman I spent time with was one of the heads of the New York chapter, and she's African-American. And her mission is to try to expand the Daughters of the American Revolution to include Latinas and Native Americans, because in her words, it was the First World War. You had all sorts of countries, not just the United States, or not just the colonies fighting. So my answer is depending on the person, yeah, it could be tremendously rewarding.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We have, it's either Tan or Tan in Frisco. Hi.
Hi, I'm Vietnamese, and I was born in a very remote area of Vietnam where there wasn't much of any record kept. I didn't even have a birth certificate. And so I was just curious. I was born, I'm identified as Vietnamese, but then my last name is more Chinese. And I grew up speaking Vietnamese and Cambodian, but I don't know what I am.
Have you taken a DNA test?
No, I haven't. But I was just curious, since it's so remote out there, is there any kind of record or any kind of place where I can go look?
My suggestion is, and I will say that is a problem. I think that the records are lopsided and that certain cultures have much better records than others, which is a shame. There is a certain flattening effect from DNA where it you can any culture can try that. But I would say the Mormons, you might want to, they are sort of the Golden State Warriors of genealogy, and they go to every country on earth and try to track down whatever records they have, and they do make them available to the world on FamilySearch.org. So check that out.
My guest is author A.J. Jacobs. We're talking about his new book, It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. Join us at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org. We're also on Twitter at @KERAThink.
Support for the Think Podcast comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening master's program for working professionals. You can apply now for the fall of 2017. More at smu.edu/MLS.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with author A.J. Jacobs. His new book is called It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. Okay, AJ, I have to tell you, I was really interested because I am always fascinated by people who can trace their family's arrival in the United States to Ellis Island. And lots of families have these really interesting, sometimes funny stories of name changes. You have one in your family, and a lot of them turn out to be nonsense.
That's true. If you want to annoy a genealogist, then tell them about name changes at Ellis Island, because that is not where the names change. They usually change after or before. So, yeah, because I have one story about, and it's a classic story that's told by many different families about how the agent at Ellis Island would say, "What's your name?" And the guy would say, "My ancestor said Friedenheit," which means in German something along the lines of "It doesn't matter to me; it's all equal to me." And then suddenly he becomes Friedenheit, but it's not true. It's just a lovely story. And hey, I am not denigrating stories. I love family lore, and I think there's fun. There's value to it, even if it's not 100% true.
So if people changed their own names, what would their motivation have been?
Oh, well, just assimilation. I mean, you're going to have a lot more discrimination against someone with an unpronounceable name than someone named Sullivan. So, and I think that still goes on today. And yeah, I'm not judging. I don't judge my great-great-grandpa for changing his name. You know, I think there are there are pros and cons to it. I can see in one sense it's a slap in the face to his ancestors, but in the other sense, hey, he had to get a job.
Do you know what your great-great-grandfather was before he was a Friedenheit?
Oh, well, there's all sorts of old names like Keigel others that are unpronounceable.
Hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones. Mary is calling us from Dallas. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Our family also has a name change story, but what I was calling about, you mentioned your Scandinavian percentage had changed because of the database, and I was wondering if today the Native American data is pretty accurate, or I had seen a program on PBS where some Native Americans did not want their DNA in the database because it conflicted with their origin story. So I was wondering about that.
I heard that story, too. That was really interesting. I talk about it a bit in the book. It is relatively accurate. You've got to take the DNA test with a grain of salt. But the big picture of Native American, Asian, African is relatively accurate nowadays. When they try to get granular, like Irish versus English, then it's much more speculative. But it raises fascinating questions. For instance, I have a woman in the book who has red hair, a very pale complexion. She took the DNA test, found out she was part Irish, but she was also half Latina, late Latina. Her dad was a Latino. And it's interesting because she did not like her Irish part of the family. So she immediately decided to identify as Latina. And more than that, she had 6% of Native American Latino DNA, the Taino group from Puerto Rico. And she has decided that she identifies as Taino, and she likes the rituals and the culture. And I can see both ways. I can see that on one hand, this is a lovely story. I'm glad she's found peace and happiness and an identity. I can also see on the other side people who have 90% a Native American DNA saying, stop trying to appropriate our culture. So it's going to get complicated and interesting.
You met a group of people who are campaigning to destigmatize marriage among first cousins.
I'm glad you brought that up. I love that chapter.
Yeah, because your thinking on this changed.
Yes. This is not something I'm going to be marching in the streets about. I think there are more important issues, but it's also a wild insight into human nature because right now, about half of the states, it is legal to marry your first cousin. And half the states, it's illegal to marry your first cousin. And I ran across a group called CousinCouples.com, and I interviewed the head of it, and he's married to his first cousin, and he says that there should be no stigma. He is proud to be married. And the main argument, of course, is birth defects. I mean, how can you, you're going to raise the chances of your kids having birth defects. His argument is that the chance of a birth defect from first cousin marriage is about the same as a 40-year-old woman having a child with birth defects. So his argument is, are you going to ban that? Are you going to forbid non-relatives who both have the Alzheimer's gene from getting married? So I made the switch. I said, you know what? I see your point. I'm not going to endorse first cousin marriage, but I also don't think it should be illegal.
Another thing you discovered was that pretty much all of us, at least a few generations back, have probably first cousin grandparents.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is an astonishing statistic by a Rutgers anthropologist who said that if you look at the grand sweep of human history, 80% of marriages were first or second cousins, 80%. And that's because for most of our history, we were on these very small tribes, and you basically married whoever was nearby.
Thank you, Match.com.
That's true.
Widening the pool. All right.
That's right.
Let's go back to the phones. Edith is on the line in Dallas. Hello, Edith.
Hello. I'm asking about Y chromosome discoveries. My brother, John Dulles, who is related to John Foster Dulles, is the last of the line of males, born of males, all the way back to Ireland, I believe, and Scotland. Is there a particular test that you would recommend for discovering more of just pure male side of the families, or
that Y chromosome side?
That's a great question, and I'll do this super briefly and probably make it way too simplistic, but there are three different main types of DNA test, and one is the X chromosome test, which basically tests for your mother's 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 mother's. It's this one gene that goes down all the way from mother's mother. So you won't get, if you have 256 six great-grandparents, you're only getting the one with that test. Same as on the other side, there's a Y chromosome, which is your dad's. Then there's one that's sort of a mix, where they take the DNA from all of your ancestors and mix it together and try to estimate the percentages. So they both have their advantages. One is that the Y chromosome test can go all the way back, and it's quite clear and clean. On the other hand, you're only getting one out of many thousands of ancestors.
I was interested, you contacted the sort of science popularizer and scientist Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he told you, I don't care who I'm related to.
Yeah, I love this part, because I have a similar, I sympathize with this strain of thinking. He said, you know what, I see all humans as my inspiration, and I share DNA with Mother Teresa and Einstein, and that's who I'm going to focus on, not my great-great-great-great-grandparent. And I totally understand, and that's part of the point of this book, is that we are all one big family, and we shouldn't be so focused on one particular tribe. But at the same time, for me, it really does provide a wonderful inspiration and motivation to look into history. So knowing that I do share, that Albert Einstein is my sixth cousin, I can then use it to inspire my kids and say, look, you know, this guy, he wasn't just a dead white guy with crazy hair. He was Uncle Albert, and he was really interesting. I think you should learn more about him.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author A.J. Jacobs. His new book is called It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. How interested did your kids get in all this, A.J.?
Well, it's funny. They were, part of the book is about my kids and my family history, and partly it's how to, but partly it's also an adventure. I tried to throw the biggest family reunion ever with thousands of people, and what I loved is that they got involved in that. They were figuring out, you know, what games we can have for the kids, and can we invite like a George Washington impersonator because he was our cousin, You read in these parenting magazines that it's good to have a project with the kids, but I'm not, you know, I don't know how to build a kayak. This was my kayak, throwing the world's biggest family reunion.
So you had outposts all over the world.
Right. It was a wild and strange, stressful for me, but wonderful in some ways, day. We had 40 different simultaneous parties all around the world, connected by the internet, and we all sang Sister Sledges, We Are Family, with the actual Sister Sledge at the same time, and we had speakers like Henry Louis Gates and scientists and celebrities. At one point on stage, we had a rabbi, a minister, and a Buddhist monk, so it was almost the setup to a joke.
What kind of person shows up at an event like this?
Well, it's interesting because when I would invite distant cousins that I found through DNA testing, seventh cousins, or those I found through these massive trees where I have millions of cousins, and some of them would respond, I would email them, and some would respond, that is my worst nightmare. I want nothing to do. Please stop contacting me. Fine, I understand. But some of them were incredibly receptive and said, I love the idea that we are all one family, and this is a great way to prove it. And they and we got so many volunteers. I could not have put it on myself. There were hundreds of people who helped me put it on because they liked the message in these very separatist, tribalistic, tribal times. This idea that we are all, that we share 99.9% of our DNA, and we should focus on that instead of our differences.
Were you going for a Guinness record?
Oh, yes. And we, well, here's the secret about records. It's easier to establish a record than it is to break one. So there is actually a record already of a family in France that had 5,000 people, but no one had a record of how many different places on the world you would have a simultaneous family reunion. So we had 10,000 people around the world celebrating at the same time.
How much work does it realistically take for anybody who wants to know about family history to dig deeper than a few generations back?
This, I will say, is the golden age of genealogy because go back a couple decades, you had to travel to Cleveland and search through a basement in a courthouse for records. Now so much of it is online, and it's really astounding, and it's just so thrilling to find these little hints and nuggets. I was very lucky because my grandfather actually had a 400-page FBI file that I got through the Freedom of Information Act. Yeah, so, I mean, he wasn't a gangster. He was a lawyer, a civil rights lawyer for Martin Luther King, and that's why they followed him. But I learned all sorts of things, including how he climbed up the side of a dorm to be with my grandmother, who was, her dorm did not allow men in. So, and this was all in the FBI. So I would say it is a great time to, if you have any interest, to pursue this hobby.
Has this project really changed the way you deal with strangers on a daily basis? Does somebody cut you off in traffic and you think, that might be Cousin Edna, so I'm just going to not honk?
You know what? That's exactly what I try to think. I try to think, you know, they probably have the same 10th great-grandpa or grandma, and what would she want us to do? Probably hug it out. And I'm going to try to be less angry. And, you know, of course, I still get angry. I'm still a human. But it helps. It actually helps relieve my anger a bit.
The new book by author A.J. Jacobs is It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. A.J., always great to speak with you. Thanks for making time for us.
Oh, my pleasure, Chris. Anything for family.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker. Shelley Canavy is technical director. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. We're on Facebook and Twitter. The Twitter handle is @KERAThink. You can subscribe to the podcast and learn more about the show at think.kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.